Let's begin now.
You know, today, I just woke up and I said this.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregivers Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Liza.
And I'm Kristen.
And together we are the Empowered Caregivers. Today's show is sponsored by Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin, a nonprofit, member-owned health plan providing high-quality care and health insurance service to over 85,000 members living in South Central Wisconsin.
Each week, we do this show to support the nearly 600,000 family caregivers in Wisconsin and to raise awareness on caregiver issues. So on that, let's jump right in.
Yes, I cannot wait to speak to today's guest. But before we do, I just want to share that if you want to do more to protect your mental health, learn how to advocate for yourself, and have a more productive conversations, join us for our 6-week Powerful Tools for Caregivers course. This is a free offering. You can sign up at empoweredcaregivercommunity.com, and it'll be on Wednesday, April 12th through May 17th from 12 to 1:30 p.m. via Zoom.
So I'm really excited to talk about that course that we're going to be leading. But before we dig into more of that, I cannot wait to introduce you to Edie Nathan. She is a therapist, author, and grief expert. Hello, Edie. You have on your website that you are dedicated to helping people understand their grief, cope with the fear and struggle that holds them back, and learn to live fully. Can you please introduce yourself and tell listeners more about what you do?
Absolutely. I love your enthusiasm because we're talking about, it's great, you know?
Thank you.
We're talking about things that we don't talk about, that we don't want to talk about. And it's often been very much disguised or hidden. And my goal is, even though I'm a clinician, even though I talk about grief and I talk about burnout and I talk about the experience sometimes of trauma that aligns with being a caretaker because of what you see and what you take in, I guess my experience or experiences, you know, look at grief as an ally. It can, and look at the grief of a caretaker as an ally.
Well, Edie, I think that's why you might be sensing the enthusiasm in my voice, right? It's not that I necessarily think grief is something that we should all just like get ready to talk about on a Wednesday evening over a glass of wine. It's just that grief is something that I have experienced and that I'm experiencing. We haven't had a chance to necessarily introduce ourselves to you, but both Liza and I are parents of adult children with disabilities. I'm currently going through a divorce, and I've also helped both of my parents pass on to the next place that people go. So grief is something I've experienced a ton of, and it's been the classic grief of a loss of a family member and someone that I love, but it's also been this more untraditional grief of having an adult daughter with disabilities and knowing that I'm going to have to have a different path, a different trajectory than I expected, and recognizing that part of that's going to involve grief, right? And then again, there's the more classic sense of grief that comes with ending a pretty profound relationship. So I think the enthusiasm you're sensing is that I just know you have a lot to offer me, because grief is something that's knocking on my door all the time.
Mm-hmm. And you have a book called It's Grief, The Dance of Self-Discovery Through Trauma. This book features a compelling mix of science-based knowledge with heart-centered compassion on how grief can affect people at every level of their being. I wholeheartedly believe that, but as an individual, I would think that it would take a level of self-awareness. So what is the first step that people can do to learn how grief is impacting them?
Well, grief is an individual process, right? No one experiences it exactly the same way.
Sure.
So what might be a first step for one person is not necessarily going to be the first step for another. So I can't really tell you what the first step is. What I can tell you, though, is that the thing that we want to ignore, which is often the grief response and however it affects you, is the very thing that we need to embody and dance with. And the dance is going to be different for everyone.
Can you speak to that a little bit more? What do
sure.
you? Yeah, thanks.
So, sure. So, grief, you know, we push it away. And it, sometimes grief, caretaker's grief, can lead to anxiety. And so what do we want to do when we feel anxiety? All we want to do is push it away and pretend that it doesn't exist. But there's a thing about anxiety. When you want to push it away, guess what happens? Mm-hmm. It gets bigger. Mm-hmm. And it keeps on knocking. And it keeps on saying, come on, I'm here. And it, the more you push it away, the bigger it gets. But if you invite it in and you say, I'm not afraid of you, maybe you can teach me something. And maybe that dysregulated state that I get into when I am grieving and feeling anxious, I can actually begin to address through breath work, through exercise, through talking about it, through finding my own agency.
I like that. And I think maybe what Liza's question might lead to, if I can make a connection here, is that that first step is being open to inviting it in.
It could be, but it's either inviting in anxiety or I think of the first phase of grief as what I call the emotional armor phase. And do I think that people, that's what people experience? Yes. Whether they are grieving the loss of a loved one or they're grieving the loss of a caretaking role or they're grieving a divorce. And that is the place where numbness exists. That's the place where the brain is feeling very disordered. And it's a respite also.
I think that does help clarify. And I think for me, when I was thinking about it, there's different forms of grief. And I'm sure when you have grief of a loss of a loved one or, you know, a relationship ending, it's very clear to draw that distinction. You know, how I'm feeling or what's coming up is grief. That seems obvious. But I know that there's also more subtle forms of grief or you may not be realizing that, wow, this is grief that I'm dealing with. This is the problem. And so I guess that's where I was more curious. How do you get to that place where you can label it as such?
So my first question when anyone comes into my office or I'm speaking to people on Zoom or I'm talking about this, it's not, I don't want to know the story, your story immediately. What I want to know is, what are you yearning for? And what have you lost? And that opens up an entire conversation that enables perhaps a different response than the one that people tend to go to by rote because they've spoken of it so much.
Well, that or else I think what both of you have already brought up that's touching me is that, yes, it's very clear when my parents passed away, it's very clear as a marriage is ending that I'm going to be going through those classic stages of grief. But what I didn't understand is that by having an adult daughter with disabilities, I was going to grieve having a daughter with a wedding. I was going to grieve having a daughter that was going to provide grandkids for me, because that is not in Nicole's future. And I don't mean that from a negative standpoint. I mean that from a preserving her and what her abilities are, right? Those are not things that should be part of her journey. And I didn't understand for a long time that those were the things I was grieving when sometimes I presented as angry or resentful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I hear you speak to this, and you're right. Grief hides in many ways, and it loves to play hide and seek. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to determine what's going on. And it can look like anger or depression or anxiety or frustration or rage. And really, what's going on is grief.
Interesting.
Exactly. And I guess that's kind of what I was getting at. Not that I'm trying to use this hour as a therapy session, although I would absolutely love it, is, you know, for me, it kind of was the fact that, you know, I graduated and went on to school and wanted to become this career woman, right? And had big lofty goals for myself. And I had a son fairly young, on the autism spectrum, and I stayed home and I did everything that I needed to do for him. And there was a lot of stuff going on emotionally that probably was grief, right? What I wanted or what I had hoped for had kind of dissolved or turned into something else, but I was not able to identify that until probably years later.
Right. I didn't identify mine as, you know, as grief until years later either. Excuse me. This question that we crafted beforehand, Edie, it might fit into this or it might just be asking you to repeat the same thing so you can be honest. So where or how do you see grief showing up in people's lives where they might not expect it? Does that lead you to think about something different than what we're talking about here where?
Well, it's a yes and. Okay, you know, when we take medication and we're not the same people, there can be grief. The medication may help the depression or the anxiety, but then there is this some sense of a loss of self. And grief can evolve when there is that sense of a loss of self or a loss of hope. Or a loss of the life you thought you were going to be leading. And so is it lurking? You bet. Does it come out for caregivers? Yes. Does it occur for people who work in long-term care facilities? Yes. Or for people who are working in hospitals or physicians or PAs? Yes, yes, and yes. And it's accompanied often by burnout. And I actually have a program that I developed in Canada for social workers working in long-term care homes, teaching them how to actually create a program for staff, for residents, and for families on burnout, on trauma, and on grief.
Mm. We're talking with Edie Nathan, wow. National speaker, therapist, and author on the impacts of grief and trauma in our lives and how we all have it in some form and what we can do about it. Listen next to pick up this conversation.
You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show with Kristen Voss and Liza Hellenbrand, and we've been talking with Edie Nathan on grief and trauma and what we can do to let go and live more happier lives. Well, actually, we haven't really gotten into that part yet, and during the break, Edie and I were just talking about how she uses different language, and I love the power of words, as many of you that follow us and listen to us know, and that it's not about being in the PC game. It's about recognizing that words have meaning and have, you know, a purpose. And so when we were talking, Edie pointed out that she doesn't use the different stages of grief. She uses the word, phases of grief. So Edie, I want to give you an opportunity to explain that to our listeners.
Thank you so much. So a stage often when referred to in grief, I see it as having a beginning, a middle, and an end. And, you know, grief is not so precise. It never is. It probably never will be. And I shouldn't say never. I shouldn't say shouldn't.
it's
those
okay.
are two words that I really try to stay away from.
Me too.
And that's great, you know, because the engagement with grief is going to be different for everyone. However, to utilize the word stage as opposed to phase is really an important aspect of my book. because the phase moves in and out, and sometimes it gets layered, and there are many different phases that occur all at one time. So sometimes there's the anger and rage phase, and then there's the anxiety phase and fear phase, and then there's the forgiveness phase. And sometimes they commingle, and they love to meet and have conversations. So I have, you know, utilized the 11 phases of grief within my paradigm.
Well, Edie, I appreciate that, because I tend to be somebody who's too linear, you know, and again, I don't like using should and all of that, but I know one of the things that I'm working on, right, not I should improve, but that I'm working on, is to see what I value, which is that life is much more circular, right? Life, I think of like Mother Earth. I think of like the different cycles of the seasons. And I don't think then as a result, I'm going to go through these clean little phases and stages of grief, right? That instead it is going to be overlapped and interconnected. And I love just the visuals that you put out there in that description.
I love the analogy of the seasons. It's just put it into context for me living in Wisconsin, because you can experience summer and winter all in the same day here. There's yes. there's no guarantee. So thank
Great
you
point.
For that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And, you know, you have a new book that's coming out, Sexual Grief. And I'm really intrigued to talk more about this. You're a licensed sex therapist. And can you explain how grief and trauma impact us as sexual beings?
It's a loaded question.
In a positive way or a negative way? Wait a minute, Edie. I gotta check in on that reaction.
Well, because you know, I'm in the thick of writing this book right now, and so my brain is full of stories and metaphors around sexual grief, and sexual grief, and it's interesting because you speak of disabilities and. What first came up was sexual grief. And I'll tell you why. The way that I define sexual grief, I define grief as, you know, what are you yearning for? What are you hungry for? In many ways, it's the same thing with sexual grief, except that sexual grief is a natural response to an unnatural, sexually traumatic event or experience.
Okay, can you say that one more time?
It can.
I really, that was deep, so I really want to hear it one more time.
It is, and that's why I said it's loaded.
Thank you.
Sexual grief is a natural response to an unnatural, sexually traumatic event or experience.
Okay.
And it can hold you hostage. So a disability can be held hostage by the disability. And someone, kids, adults who have disabilities, often what they don't get is touch.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get held. And just because they have a disability doesn't mean they don't tap into desire.
Absolutely.
And they may not be, right? And they may not be able to have a language around it, but it is something that gets missed. And often the caregiver, and I'm not saying you in any way, but often the caregiver is so uncomfortable with the idea that their child into adult, you know, and into those precious developmental years, because someone with disabilities still goes through those developmental years, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Edie, you're singing my song.
We'll have those feelings.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I've shared some on the show, not a ton. And, you know, that's to honor my daughter's dignity. But yes, she is 21 and she has the libido of a 21-year-old young woman, but she has the cognitive yes. ability of about a 6-year-old. And so there's a lot of navigating we're doing as parents, and we're co-parenting, you know, really well, but we are trying to figure out how to give her the freedom for sexual expression, but also protect her from any time where she might become vulnerable. And so I think this is a really important point that you bring out. And I see in some of the communities that we're in, people with physical disabilities who might be, you know, in very unfortunate and stereotypical ways perceived as somebody who would never be sexual, but that's completely inappropriate because just what we physically present isn't necessarily what we spiritually and energetically and sexually present. So this is going to be a continued interesting conversation with you, Edie, as we return from the break and talk more about sexual grief and how to be attuned to it.
Empowered Caregiver Show with Liza Hallenbrand and Kristen Voss. And we've been talking with Edie Nathan, a licensed sex therapist, speaking about sexual grief. And I just wanted to clarify, because I'm not sure if I'm understanding it correctly. When we're talking about sexual grief, does that need to come from a past sexual trauma experience or related grief in that sense, or can it be just general grief that you're experiencing, that you have, that has carried itself into the bedroom?
Okay.
It's a deep question. Sorry.
All is good. Because it doesn't really have to do with the bedroom.
Okay. Oh, that's where you hesitated. Okay.
And so that's where I hesitated. It's not about what goes on in the bedroom. It's what interrupts one's ability to be intimate, to have self-love. Sexual grief is an interrupter, and there does not need to be sexual trauma. The reason I worded it the way I worded it is because a sexually traumatic event or experience, the event is often external, like abuse or violence or something of that nature, or, you know, the voices from people who have bullied or hurt. Okay. That can be a sexually traumatic, you know, event, or, you know, there is then the developmental timeline where the unwanted child or the person who was born with disabilities, you know, must, you know, deal with messaging around either their disability or having been unwanted, or for girls who menstruate and have never been told that they were going to have a period and they think they're bleeding to death.
Sure.
And as a result of feeling this every time they get their periods, they have a reaction and they're terrified, and the terror reigns through their lives. Or someone who's experienced religious trauma syndrome, which is a real thing. And this is when messaging from very, very conservative religious cults, as an example, dominate the person and the way they relate to their sexual selves.
Okay, so I think that's clear, right? That anybody who's gone through something that distinctly traumatic is going to be experiencing what you've defined as sexual grief. And during the break, you explained that you've kind of coined that term, and that for you, you're saying it's an, I don't even want to use your words again, say it for me one last time. What is the definition?
It's a natural response to an unnatural, sexually traumatic event or experience.
Okay. So what I'd like to do, though, is bring this back to the family caregiver, right? So here we are, the Empowered Caregiver Show. And I think what Liza might have been trying to ask, or what I'm interested in, is we have these family caregivers that haven't necessarily gone through such a clear-cut definition of trauma, sexual trauma, like you just defined. But is there an aspect to being a family caregiver that could be bringing up sexual grief for them because of the disruption and extra challenges that they have in their life of being a caregiver, as well as being a parent, a daughter, a professional, you know, anything, put any of those. Well, and I also don't want to make it just about women, that there's also men that are caregivers, right? So do you, can you help make that connection for us that might be a little bit more mainstream?
I think that I was talking about sexual grief as a caregiver who was coping with a child grown into an adult, who's got disabilities.
Well, that makes sense.
And so it's not the care, right? And it's not necessarily the caregiver who is experiencing the sexual grief. What they are experiencing probably is a desire to mask the sexual desires or needs of their child or grown adult who has needs.
Right. And of course you went there because that's what I asked you to do, right? Because I was mentioning my daughter. But now I'm asking you to address, can somebody have sexual grief just because they're a family caregiver?
Well, they could if what happens for them, the event is that they are a caregiver. And that event has caused so much chaos within the brain that they're no longer able to partner with a partner if they have one. They are no longer able to live a life that they were thinking they were going to live. And perhaps that affects their ability to get close to someone. They may feel the need to just concentrate on the role of the caregiver. And within that role, there is often burnout. And within that role, there's also often trauma or a traumatic response because they have a loss of their needs, their desires. I mean, we were just speaking about, you know, the desire to, you know, be in the world and be a working woman that is very much involved in the world. And then, you know, a child is born and they have needs. And as a result of those needs, everything you thought you were going to do and have disappears. And so that loss of self, perhaps even some shame that goes right into that, you know, cuts into or affects, perhaps not always, the body, desire, and yearning.
I think you hit the nail right on the head there, Edie, where I was going or what I was getting at with that. You know, I guess kind of on a personal level as a caregiver is, you know, that loss of desire, or, you know, even the shame and the guilt, and when it comes to that intimacy, it's like there's a wall or something because you're feeling so many other emotions. So I think you've explained that beautifully. Thank you. I want to switch gears a little bit. I know each show we ask powerful questions, those that have you reflect on your personal experience and wisdom. When it comes to being a family caregiver, there can be a lot of guilt involved, as we just mentioned. How are guilt and grief related? And what can a family caregiver do with those feelings of guilt?
Well, not everyone feels guilt the same way, right? Guilt, like grief, is going to be an individual experience. Guilt is often around what you feel you've done, like something you've done or something you're not doing, you know? And there's the critic. There's the judge that comes up around guilt. And again, it's what I discussed at the very top of the show, inviting it in. So instead of saying, oh God, I can't deal with this, to say, okay, what is it saying? Why is it present? How can I speak to this? And if there is guilt, what is the guilt about? What is the judgment about? How is the critic coming in? Is the critic saying you're not doing enough, or you're not allowed to laugh, or you're not allowed to have your own life, or you're not allowed to have desire, or you shouldn't go out and and spend a night with friends. Instead, you're only in the way that the role of the caretaker has captured you. Mm. And what do you do about it? You begin to find arenas and areas where you get to know who you are outside of the role of caretaker.
Wow. Wow, that gives me a lot to think about.
Yeah.
And it also makes me want to just ask a little bit more about you, Edie. What brought you to this work? I mean, how are you able to see this perspective that you're bringing to us and that you're bringing to the readers of your soon to be, well, you already have one book, but the next one that's coming out. Yeah. What brought you to this work?
In the first book, it's Grief, the Dance of Self-Discovery Through Trauma and Loss. I wanted people to think of grief as a journey and that we kind of can't escape it. And I talk a lot about the me, myself, and I. It's like grief teaches you who you are, what you need. And I learned so much about grief because of my own losses, because of my own traumas. And those losses and those traumas affected me in such a way that I had to pivot. You both have talked about pivoting. I had to pivot. And the world that I thought I was going to get into, which was theater and acting and public speaking in the corporate world, stopped when I lost my first love and changed my entire trajectory of my life.
Well, sure. I mean, that's it, right? Is that grief comes from these things that are going to be unexpected. And whether they're things that are, like I said, those more traditional aspects of losing somebody for good because they've passed away, or losing what you thought was going to be the trajectory of your life.
And if I may then add that sexual grief came into the conversation somewhere around 2017, 2018. And all of a sudden, I'd already been writing my first book, and it was like, oh my gosh, you know, trauma, grief. I often say, I talk about the things people don't want to talk about: trauma, grief, and sex. And the thing is that when you put the three together and you are a caregiver, it is very, very hard to cope with the magnitude of what they offer. And so I realized, oh my, I must find a way to speak on this topic. I must define it and cultivate all the different ways that it comes into one's life.
Yes.
That makes complete sense. I have one follow-up question that I really want to get in there. I know that there's different phases and everyone's journey is different, but what does it look like when you come out the other side? I'm sure it takes a lot of work, a lot of self-awareness, but what does life look like when you do the work? What can you expect?
It's different for everyone. you want an answer.
I do.
And I understand that you do. But everybody's journey, everybody's, like, you know, part of this world is who you were and who you become and how you move through those phases affects what you decide to become. Some people say, I'm going to pay this life forward and I'm going to do so, which is what I did. I decided to pay Paul's life forward. And I decided to say, I'm going to embody the teaching of this to all people because I can see how it affects all people. Other people might say, you know what? I'm never talking about this. I'm going into hiding. I'm never taking off my wedding band, or I'm never talking about my child with disabilities, or I'm never going to show that I've lost a limb, or I've lost a house, or I have a mental illness.
Great point.
And so I'm going to just remain hidden. And other people will become senators and advocates for gun control. And other people will become dancers with one leg. So how do you, what can you expect?
Depends on you.
Anything and everything.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
It's beautiful, actually.
It is. It is. And I'm sorry for the one size fits all approach, but I would imagine that generally speaking, there has to be a certain level of enlightenment, right? When you listen to the grief, when you're open to the story that it's telling, when you go through the phases and process, I would think that you would come out the other side a better person. Otherwise, you didn't do the work, right? You're still stuck.
But it's hard. Everybody does the work in their own way, right? And they blossom in the way that they need to blossom. And some people stay exactly where they are, and that's what they need. And there's no right or wrong. Mm.
Thank you for that. You're listening to Edie Nathan, who is a grief therapist. We'll be right back after this short break. Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show with Liza and Kristen, and we've been speaking with Edie Nathan, a sex therapist and an expert on grief. And I just want to make sure that we leave enough time for you, Edie, to promote everything that you have going on. I was on your website. I could spend hours of there. It's a wealth of information. Can you let listeners know where to find you, what they can expect, and where they can get your books and any upcoming events that you have going on?
Well, I'm really excited about the upcoming event that's happening in September, and it's a cruise, an inner voyage cruise. I am the keynote speaker. It's for 6 nights, and it goes out of Florida, and you kind of choose what workshops you want to go to. And, you know, we're going to have about 100 people joining us. So I hope that you join us. And that's going to really be a lot of fun. Other than that, you can certainly know more about me, edynathan.com. That's edynathan.com. You can find me on Psychology Today, on Medium, and all of social media. So please write to me, ask me questions, and don't be shy. I always answer whatever questions comes my way.
Okay. This is the first I've heard about the cruise. So Edie, I might be seeing you soon.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time today.
Yep. We really appreciate your time. And now today, thank you very much. Sorry. And now I want to be able to introduce Megan Ramstek from the American Parkinson Association of Wisconsin. Parkinson's disease affects about 1 in 100 Americans over the age of 60. Welcome, Megan. Before we have you tell us a little bit about yourself, I know we want to make sure that we give you the microphone to be able to let listeners know about upcoming events and how they can support the Parkinson's Association.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yes.
We are so excited about our upcoming event. It is the Parkinson's Half Marathon 5K and More in Cottage Grove on April 15th. This is the 11th year of the event, and we are going all out. We've got a hot breakfast buffet with coffee, hot chocolate, craft beer. We've got live music, face painting, a petting farm. You can register online or find out more information by going to apdaparkinson.org/WI for Wisconsin.
Okay.
Or so wait. Event on Facebook.
Okay. No, I love that. But wait, I got to go back. A petting zoo?
Yes.
Why not? Why not?
David's Petting Farm.
No, I love it. I love it. So Nicole and I are going to do this. Tell me all the details one more time. Just recap them. So when is this happening?
Sure. It is April 15th at Bakken Park in Cottage Grove, Wisconsin. You can register for the half marathon, the 5K, the walk, the kids run, or just purchase a wristband for breakfast and activities.
Sweet. And we're going to find this. Say your website for us one more time, please.
APDAParkinson.org/WI for Wisconsin. Or like I said, you could just Google it or look it up on Facebook.
Sure. Yeah. Excellent.
And on that note, I want to make sure that we're getting this right, because I've learned today that there's different Parkinson's associations. So you are with the American Parkinson's Disease Association of Wisconsin, APDA. Did I get that right?
Yeah. So APDA is just the shortened version of American Parkinson's Disease Association. Okay. We're a national organization that started in 1961. But each branch kind of focuses on their local region and community. So if someone to donate a dollar to me right now, I would send 25 cents to National for research and keep 75 cents right here in Wisconsin to help our residents.
Mm, wonderful.
Love it.
And I know you have a lot of resources on your website. Can you let listeners know a little bit what the association has to offer you, where they can find you? I know you put your website out there, but what is a first step? You've got this diagnosis. You just got it yesterday. I'm on your website. Now what?
If you were just diagnosed, I just think the best important thing to do is find a group, whether it's a support group, an exercise class, or just regular social gatherings. Having other people you can relate to and ask for advice is a critical positive. Critical for positive outlook.
I guess I should have clarified a little bit. Do you guys have any of those offerings? Do you have support groups, or exercise, or different activities?
Sure. So on our website, you can find a list of all of the exercise groups and support groups that we know of throughout all of Wisconsin. We also have a bunch of other resources. Obviously, you can check it out. But I think some of the important ones to let people know about, we have that list. We have financial assistance for people who are struggling. And we have a community that you can become part of by attending our events and meeting people that are facing the same problems.
I love that. I mean, that's what we're trying to do here with our show, the Empowered Caregiver Community. And so since this is a show for family caregivers, does the APDA have any offerings that are specifically there to support the family caregivers?
Yes, I'm glad you asked. We are about to launch our very first APDA Wisconsin Care Partner Support Group. It's going to meet once a month beginning in May at a brand new senior living campus, the Courtyard in Fitchburg.
Oh, yeah.
When someone becomes a care partner, they start wearing a lot of hats. They go from a spouse to an advocate, a nurse, a therapist. And what I hear a lot is that partners burn out faster than people with PD. So our dream is to turn this support group into a huge success and then use that model to launch new support groups all over the state. Because during the pandemic, we lost a lot of those groups.
Definitely. Well, and I love that we're going to start this collaboration, because it means that we'll have you back and we'll continue more of this conversation so that we can hear about how we can. I love the term care partners, right? How we can support you and you can support us to make that vision come true.
Thank you
I'd
so
love
much.
To come back anytime. Thanks.
Thank Great. You.
Thanks, Megan.
Be sure to join us next week as we talk with Latonya Johnson, who was elected to Wisconsin's 6th District in 2016 and previously served in Wisconsin's 17th Assembly District since 2012. She's the 6th District, or excuse me, the 6th District includes residential, urban, and downtown Milwaukee. We'll also be speaking with Representative Jenna Jacobson from Oregon on the governor's budget and the proposals that impact family caregivers and what caregivers need to do to get these proposals passed.
Yes, we know how important all this legislative stuff is and all this advocacy work we want to do, but we will also be talking with Erin DeGrave. I think I'm saying it right.
I think you are too.
Okay, and that she is a nutritionist from the Hy-Vee food store chain, and she's going to speak with us about nutrition and well-being and what Hy-Vee has to offer to help you with your health needs.
Which I think is so cool that a grocery store has their own nutritionist that covers the entire state. So whether you have diabetes, looking to lose weight, she is there to help you get your grocery list together. So listen to us next week.
And we know that caregiving can be overwhelming and exhausting, so that's why we want to end each show with our positive note. You got this, and together we are stronger. So stay connected to the Empowered Caregiver Community. Night, everybody.